So what are the implications of the natural history of cervical precancer for treatment? Most HPV infections are transitory in nature, so no treatment is required. In fact, no treatment exists for HPV infection. Most CAN1 regress, if systematic follow-up cannot be ensured, treat. Certainly you are over-treating, but no harm. CAN2 and 3 are true precursors of cervical cancer, and one should treat them. The risk of invasive cancer is still high in treated women with CAN, so wherever possible, they should be followed up. So now we will briefly review the anatomy and physiology of the lower genital tract, with particular emphasis on cervix, so that this provides a good basis to understand the basis of early detection of cervical cancer. I'm sure most of you are very much aware of the normal gross anatomy of the uterine cervix. The uterus is a muscular organ. Cervix is the neck portion of the uterus, which is seen protruding into the vault of the vagina when you introduce a speculum and look at it. And the cervix has very close relationship with the urinary bladder anteriorly and with the rectum posteriorly. And it opens into the vaginal cavity through the os. And the uterine cavity is, it's a potential space quite often, which is the walls are quite opposed to each other most of the time. And uterus as a muscular organ undergoes quite a lot of changes during the life history of a woman, depending upon the menstrual status, the menopause, menarche, and all those physiological phenomena. Most of the time, the length of the cervix is around 3 centimeters. It is considerably enlarges during pregnancy, and it degenerates to less than 2 centimeters after menopause. And as I said earlier, inside the cervix you have the cervical canal, which opens into the vaginal vagina through the external os and continues with the intrauterine space through the internal os. And when you expose the cervix through the speculum, you should be able to get a good view of the cervix as a central organ in the panoramic view provided by the speculum examination. So this is what you will normally see, provided you have done a proper speculum insertion and examination. As you see here, the cervix is well exposed. You can see the os as a black hole, and the cervix is reddish here because it is covered by columnar epithelium. The exposed portion of the cervix is covered by columnar epithelium. This appears so reddish. This is because the speculum is stretched, so the cervix is very much stretched. If you loosen the speculum, you will see the cervix collapsing. Perhaps it may not appear as red as you see here. So the cervix is covered by two types of epithelium. The stratified squamous epithelium, which is about 15 to 20 layers of cells, which is more pinkish in appearance. And the endocervix is predominantly covered by columnar epithelium, which is single layered, which appears reddish in color. You can see both the color contrast here, the pinkish squamous epithelium and the reddish columnar epithelium, and these two epithelia meet at the squamocolumnar junction, which can be readily identified on speculum examination. And histologically, you can see here the squamous epithelium, and as you see here, the basal cells have dense nuclei because they are all multiplying. As the cells multiply and move upwards, the nucleus becomes condensed, and then the cytoplasmic space becomes wider. And as you see here, when the cells reach the superficial cell layer, the nucleus is really pycnotic, and there is a lot of cytoplasm. The cytoplasm appears clear here because as the cells reach the intermediate layer, they start producing glycogen. And when you process this, the tissue for histology, the glycogen is washed off. That is why the cytoplasm appears clear. Then you can see in the middle picture, the columnar epithelium with the basal nuclei, which contains a lot of granules because they secrete mucus. And then on the right side picture, you can see the squamous epithelium on the left side, continuing with the columnar epithelium, showing the squamocolumnar junction clearly. And all this, you can see that the epithelium is completely separated from the stroma from it by a tough basement membrane, and there are no blood vessels within the epithelium. The epithelial cells drive their nutrition by diffusion from the stroma. This is a very important concept that one should understand. The position of the squamocolumnar junction moves depending upon the age of the woman. In very young women before menarche, the squamocolumnar junction is just at the os. After puberty, the cervix enlarges grossly, and consequently the squamocolumnar junction moves further away from the os, and most of the cervix, exposed cervix, is covered by columnar epithelium, so which is called as ectropion. Then as the woman moves towards her 30s, the squamocolumnar junction probably starts moving towards the os, and near menopause it is just outside the os, and after menopause the squamocolumnar junction moves into the endocervical canal, and it won't be visible in many women after menopause. So the zone via the squamocolumnar junction goes on moving, and via the columnar epithelium is converted into squamous epithelium by a metaplastic process, is called the transformation zone. Actually, before puberty, there is the epithelium covering, the squamous epithelium covering the cervix, is called the original squamous epithelium, which is formed within the uterus. And after puberty, the columnar epithelium gets exposed to the vagina, and the vagina is very acidic and it irritates the columnar epithelium. So there are some specialized cells below the basement membrane of the columnar epithelium called the reserve cells. They proliferate and they convert the columnar epithelium into a squamous epithelium. So this is a newly formed squamous epithelium. This epithelium is called metaplastic epithelium. So the region via columnar epithelium is transforming into metaplastic squamous epithelium is called the transformation zone. And as it happens, the border between the newly formed squamous epithelium and the original columnar epithelium is called the new squamocolumnar junction. And from now onwards, we will call this as the squamocolumnar junction. That is the squamocolumnar junction you see. And then the original squamocolumnar junction becomes invisible, and you can identify only by certain indirect methods. And generally, the region between the original squamocolumnar junction and the new squamocolumnar junction is the transformation zone. And for all practical purposes, you will identify the transformation zone as the tissue which surrounding, as the epithelium which is surrounding the visible squamocolumnar junction. So we see here in this picture, in a very young woman after menarche, the entire cervix is reddish ectropion. The squamocolumnar junction is very much away from the os. Then in her 30s, the squamocolumnar junction has moved much more towards the canal. And when she reaches near menopause, you can see the squamocolumnar junction is just at the os. And in a postmenopausal woman, you are not able to see the squamocolumnar junction at all. The entire cervix is covered by metaplastic squamous epithelium. Now, we can show these changes, the metaplastic changes, by histology. As you see here, on the left upper picture, you can see the exposed columnar epithelium developing the reserve cells, and the reserve cells proliferate to form what is called as a reserve cell hyperplasia, which is seen on the left upper diagram. You can see the reserve cell hyperplasia with the basement membrane, and the columnar epithelium which is being shred off. And then in the lower left-hand picture, you can see the reserve cell hyperplasia becoming immature metaplasia, where there are a lot of cells with thick nuclei which are haphazardly arranged. And then as time goes on, this immature squamous metaplastic epithelium becomes regularly organized as a stratified squamous epithelium, exactly resembling the original squamous epithelium. So you can see the in the lower right lower picture, the immature squamous metaplasia on the left and the mature metaplastic squamous epithelium on the right. In this picture, you can see the pinkish squamous epithelium, the columnar epithelium with its mucus secretion, and the columnar epithelium is trying to change to metaplastic squamous epithelium, which is seen like a somewhat pale metaplastic epithelium here. In this colposcopic picture, you can appreciate the milky white immature squamous metaplastic epithelium, the mature squamous metaplastic epithelium, and the columnar epithelium in the os. And while squamous metaplasia happens, sometimes what happens is the columnar crypts, you know, the columnar epithelium is thrown into folds into the stroma, and these columnar crypts are covered by the metaplastic epithelium so that the secreted mucus cannot escape, and these crypts become enlarged like Nabothiensis, and they remain like a cystic structure for a long time. And eventually the mucus gets absorbed by the tissue and the Nabothian follicles disappear. So the Nabothian follicles indicate a mature squamous metaplastic change. Colposcopically, you can see this Nabothiensis with stretched out epithelium on them, with giving a pale appearance, pale button-like areas with prominent blood vessels, regularly branching blood vessels on them, as you see here. So this schematic diagram explains that columnar epithelium, when exposed to the vaginal acidity, gets converted to immature squamous metaplastic epithelium. In most women, the immature squamous metaplastic epithelium ends up becoming a normal glycogen-producing mature squamous epithelium, and everything ends well. In a minority, if the immature squamous metaplastic cells are infected with oncogenic HPV types, like HPV 16 or 18 in most instances, these cells may transform into clonogenic cancer cells, which may lead to atypical dysplastic squamous epithelium progressing to invasive cancer. So, as I already explained, you can see histologically appreciate a mild dysplasia or a CAN1, where the dysplastic cells occupy the lower one-third of the epithelium, and moderate dysplasia via CAN2, where the cells occupy the middle one-third, and in a CAN3, while the dysplastic cells occupy all the three layers of the epithelium, the upper one-third, middle one-third, and the lower one-third. In the previous pictures, you can appreciate the basal membrane is intact. So what is happening here? You can see the basal membrane is broken, and the cancerous cells are pushing into the stroma. And the stroma is trying to prevent further spillage of the tumor cells by mounting a cell-mediated immunity, as evidenced by a large number of lymphocytes trying to contain the malignancy. But unfortunately, it is too late now, and this cell-mediated response is not enough to control cancer at this level. So what happens? The cancer cells, there is mayhem, absolute mayhem, bedlam. They spread into the stroma. The stroma is very loose, and as you see here in these pictures, there are sheets and sheets of malignant cells in the stroma, leading to the classical presentation of invasive cervical cancer.